It's running. I'm saying something now. Stop it.
Okay, Mr. Brown.
Okay, in 1893, I used to go to Matagorda for court with my dad. He was a county commissioner, and Matagorda was a county seat. And that was before there was any Bay City or any railroad, or all we had to do was just get in the buggy and drive to Matagorda in a buggy, and if we go buggy or horses, that's the only way you get there. And there wasn't no road, just slavery time trail, you know, roads. And so there wasn't any fence except the Pierce fence, and then Hebner's and Patrucos, they had their land fence, but the rest was just a road right down through the prairie. And there wasn't many fences from Bay Prairie up here near Horton all the way to Matagorda. And my dad lived up here at the north end of the county where I was born, in an old slavery time house that was built by slaves. And it was put together with wooden pegs and mortised in, and the ceiling was joist was a 3x12 hewn out with axes by slaves. And it was a two-story house, and it had four fireplaces to it, two downstairs and two upstairs. And of course, I went to school. We had some property there in Horton, and I used to go to school there when I was around 10 years old, or about 15, I guess. And then we come back to the farm. My dad farmed there for several years until the 1900 storm, which wrecked everything in this country nearly. And we used to make syrup there, this old place. And I learned how to boil the juice, you know, to make ribbon cane syrup. And that's where I learned at that old slavery time farm there. So then we, after 1900 storm, why, that is before there was any railroad. There wasn't any railroad then when we lived up there. We had to go to Horton, which was 20 miles. And we just meandered around Caney Creek bank all the way to Horton. That was the only way you get there, in a buggy or wagon or something like that. And,
well, you say, Mr. Brown, you said this is a slavery farm. What do you mean? When? What time was this? What time of the 1800s?
I don't know. It must have been around 18... Well, before the war closed, you know, during
Well, only you had this sugar cane, say, well, what you call it, a factory or business going during the Civil War, or say,
no, that was somebody else had the farm before my dad got there. See, my daddy come in there about 1870 this place.
Well, before, say, you had these slaves on here, say, after the emancipation, did they still help out on this sugarcane farm?
Oh, yeah, they worked. There was about 15 families on this land. It was about, must have been 300 acres of cotton.
Well, then, were they still considered as slaves? Or
no, they were free then, you see.
Did y'all pay them?
Yeah, we paid them all the way from 40 cents to 50 cents a day.
What were their duties on the...
Well, chopping farm. Cotton, picking cotton. Well, pick cotton by the hundred, you know. And paid them, I think it was 50 cents a hundred for picking cotton. And you see, cotton them days was worth only 3 cents a pound, about $15 a bale. And the seed, you couldn't sell it at all. We used to feed the cotton seed to the cows in the wintertime.
Well, what were the working conditions like? How many hours a day would y'all work?
Work from sun to sun, as old fellow says, from cant to cant. When you can't see, then you can't see.
Well, was it Y'all didn't take time out to eat, or?
Oh, yeah, noon hour, you know, take hour for noon.
Did they only pick cotton, or did they help in the sugarcane also?
Oh, they done any kind of work, you know. And we had one old nigger man that I used to work with. He was a carpenter. And he learned me how to shingle, put on cedar shingles and stuff like that, you know, building tenant houses. And he was quite a good carpenter, all right. Of course, he was not a slave. He was some of the ex-slaves' children, you know. And so that was about, I went to school in Wharton. My dad and them had a couple of houses there where we'd go there in school time, you know, and I'd go to school there. But I didn't go to school very long. I was about 15 years old, then I quit. Went to work on the farm.
Well, could you tell me what it was like on the farm, say in the sugarcane industry, say from when you started work there till in the evening, what processes y'all went through, or how y'all took it to market? Y'all had any trouble?
Well, we didn't have any way to take it to market. I want to haul it to Wharton in a wagon. But we would put the syrup, after we made the syrup, we'd put it in 50-gallon barrels and just roll it out there on the ground and let it stay there until we could haul it off. And syrup was worth about 15 cents a gallon.
Well, considering at the time, was that, say, worth the money, or was that a pretty good industry?
Well, it is a pretty hard go, I'll tell you.
Well, what would y'all do when y'all first got there in the morning?
What, on the farm?
On the farm, yes. Yeah,
well, whatever we had planned for that day. If it was, you mean in making this syrup?
Yeah, say in the syrup. Could you go through the process of making the syrup?
Well, the first thing you'd have to do when you start in the morning, you'd have to build up your fire on the boilers and get up steam to where we cooked by steam. We had coils in the bottom of the pan, and the heat from the steam would go through there and cook the juice, you see, until it got to the point where it was made into syrup. Then we'd shut this valve off, you see, and draw your syrup out. And so after 1900, while we came down here, see, this railroad was finished in 1901, I believe it was, or 1900, to Van Vleck. It stopped down there, didn't go any further. They had a wire down there, and they'd turn around and go back to Horton. And so my brother and dad bought this place here, and so we then built a syrup mill here on the side of the railroad. And I made syrup here for, 10 years or more, until my brother got shooting scraped. Then, when we first started down here, we sold syrup in tank cars. I never remember it. For 21 cents to Pennington Ford. They was processors, you know, cans. They put syrup in cans, Pennington Ford, like Blue Rabbit. And so we made syrup here until my brother's death. Then after that, I didn't try to do anything, because I didn't have nobody to help me do things, you know. So I used to peddle sugar cane by the stalk. I used to go from here to Edna, Grenada, and around over there when they had good roads, because it wasn't nothing but dirt roads, and that was in 1925 and 26. And they used to set it by the stalk. I'd peddle it, you know, over that part of the country.
Now, this is after that y'all quit making it at the mill.
Yeah. And my brother's death, I just quit trying to.
Well, what was the difference of, say, peddling by the stalk and by making it at the mill?
Well, I don't guess you could compare it that way, because I only had a few acres, I think about 10 acres, And I had this place out here. It was just this old house right here. And there wasn't nothing up there where all that stuff is now. And I used to have a cane there, and then I had some across the road over there. And I sold the most of it around Bay City, and I used to go to Hempstead and Waller, different random places, you know, selling it, fed it out.
What was the price at that time of the stock? Or would you sell it by, by what quantity would you sell
well,
it?
If I saw a man, say, several hundred stocks, I'd make it turn for about, 2.5 or 3 cents a stock. Uh-huh. Lots of times they'd come out here and buy 1,000 stocks, you know, and just cut it right here out of the field.
Well, would you sell this year round, or would you season it?
That was in the fall, you know. See, this cane would mature long in October and November.
What would you do, say, the rest of the year, say, when it was growing? Or would you have to sell it anyway? Or?
Father says I just done the best I could with my wife, and we all raised lots of chickens. And of course, George Robert and them was going to school then. They had to walk part of the time. They had a little school up here at Ashwood. And it wasn't nothing but mud road, you know, and the fellows running the school bus, they'd get bogged down and they'd all have to get out and walk home. That's before they had any road along that railroad here, the county road.
And will you tell me more or less what community life was like back in 1800, early 1900, shindigs or anything like that?
No, you see, there wasn't but just a very few white people up here at Pledger. That's what they call, that's where he got his name. The old settlers there was named Pledger. And they had the post office, and that's where it got its name, Pledger Post Office. And there was very few white people up and down the creek here. But there was some, like I said, Matagorda or Horton. Between Pledger and Horton, most of it was just black people, natives. There were just but a thousand. The country was just nothing but black folk. All around West Columbia and East Columbia, and see, that was an old town too. East Columbia and Brazoria was another old town. And that's where most of these black folk live, up and down there. Bernard River there, you know.
Well, say, right after the Civil War and Emancipation, did y'all ever have any trouble with them?
Well,
or any, say, like disputes or conflicts, anything like this?
They used to run to the county. I remember when they had the county judge was a Negro, and all the county offices were run by the Negroes, see. So, the white people, what few there was, Matagorda and Horton and Columbus, they decided they'd form what they call a white man's union in order to disfranchise the Negroes so they could get white people in office. And that's how they did it.
Well, could you talk about that? Tell me how this come to being and how they white people did get into office?
Well, it was by outvoting them and not allowing them to vote. After some of them did stick it out, you see, they had lots of fights over it and killings and stuff like that. And that's the way they got back in power. But whole country was just run by the black people, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, do you know if there was any, in this part of the country, any Ku Klux Klan raids or anything of this nature?
Yeah, they had Ku Klux Klan in, let's see, what year was that now? It must have been about 1920s, I believe, or 1918, along in there. And there were several people got killed over that. And
do you know of any tales or any relationship to these Ku Klux Klan raids or anything, or do you know any stories?
Well, there was one fellow, the Tarn fellow over here in Bay City. Tarn fellow him and turned him loose down on the street.
Could you tell me, why they did it or how they found out about him? And
well, that was kind of a personal deal that they read, and they did that, I think. About maybe this man and some other fellow's wife, you know. And I think that was mainly because of that. And there's one fellow over here in West Columbia that run a gambling house. And they call it a bawdy house, you know, a red light district. And they told him to close up or they're going to give him a tar and feather. And I knew the boy. I was raised with him up there at Horton. He come down there and he was a gambler. And he told him, he said, well, said, the first person that opens that door and comes in, I said, he's going to be a dead duck because you ain't going to take me nowhere and whip me either. So sure enough, when they went there to get this guy, he killed one of them and the rest of them left. And he skipped out that night and he went up north, Colorado, I believe it was, Denver somewhere. And by George, he took pneumonia and died. That was the end of that tale. So that was about the only thing right close by that happened. Of course, I don't know.
Would you know of any other raids that were made in other county seats or anything?
No.
By this time?
Of course, up there at Wharton, I didn't know much about that, but I knew about Bay City.
Well, say back in the early 1800s, how long did it take for news to travel at this time of the Texas development?
Like you say, from where we live to go to Wharton?
Yeah, well, say in between 1890s or 1880s and early 1900s, did communication travel slow or?
Well, I mean, by either horseback or a bugging horse, some way you can go, a wagon.
Did y'all have regular mail delivery, say, at this
well,
time?
The man that carried the mail from Wharton to Pledger up there, he rode a mule. And he'd go up there of a morning early and get back about 2 or 3 o'clock in the evening with the mail. He rode a mule, over it's about 20 miles up there and 20 miles back.
So in other words, it'd take him, say, to go between those two towns, it'd take him at least
a
day.
Just about a day, because it had saddlebags, you know, that you put the mail in. You've seen, I guess you haven't seen that saddlebag. I guess you don't know what that is.
Yeah, I've seen saddlebags.
Well, anyway.
Well, say, how would they deliver the mail? Say, each county had its own mail system, and say, like at the county seat?
Well, like this fellow was going from Pledger to Wharton. Now, up there where Hiego is now, they had a post office there. And I think he would drop the Igo mail off there then. I don't know what the name of the place was then, but anyway, that would be just one stop between the Wharton and Pledger, you see. That would be about the way that was working.
Well, then say y'all, he would just drop the mail off at the post office, and if y'all wanted y'all's mail, y'all would have to go in to say town and pick up y'all's mail.
Went to had to go to the post office. From where we lived was about 2.5 miles. Back down the old muddy road. And then somebody called here from, I don't know what it was.
That's what I wanted to ask you then. To you, what kind of comparison would you get to, say, life back in the early, late 1800s and your early 1900s compared to now? I mean, say, like your transportation, And your communication and roads or stores?
Well, what I said is, from Pastor Tripp, because there wasn't no telephones until, oh, I don't know, about 1906 or 7, somewhere along the way in this part of the country. And the first radio that I listened to was a fella had was working on this railroad, putting gravel on it, and he had a special car that he was the boss man, and he's sitting out there on the sidetrack. And he told me, he said, come over here and listen. He said, I got a radio here that we can listen to what's going on. I forget what year that was, but there wasn't no radios, and wasn't no electricity. All we had was a kerosene light, or well, we did finally get a butane light. Worse, otherwise, you take there was nothing. If you wanted to find out anything, you just had to get on a horse and go find out what was going on, riding horseback. I know it used to take us all day to go to Bay City and back. Had a mule and a buggy.
We came for 10 miles.
Yeah. And sometimes the roads was bad, we didn't get to go for about a week or two for the road dried up.
Y'all have much struggle along, say, along the road, say, if it was wet? Get out and push and...
Not on with a horse and mules and stuff, because they'd pull it on, drag it through the mud, you know, but when the Model E Ford come in, boy, you talk about pushing and getting in the mud and everything, that was it. That's it. I know one time I had a store here, was selling groceries and stuff. And a fella come out here and wanted to sell me something, I don't know what it was, some salesman. And it come a thunder across the creek there, you know, you got a thunder like that. He says, I better leave you, because if it rains, I'll never get back to Bay City. He was afraid it's gonna rain before he got back. So dry, you know, when he come out of here.
Well, say if y'all had rainy weather, then y'all just couldn't drive those cars anywhere.
No, there wasn't much traffic when it rained, because unless a fella just had to go, like that old guy that I went with to West Columbia, he had to go over there for something, and whether it was a medicine or going to a doctor or something. And he said, come go with me. I said, well, it'll probably take us all day and all night to go there and back. And eggs was 75 cents a dozen, and I never forget, I had 10 dozen eggs and one of these big old candy buckets about that big. So I took them over there and sold them, 75 cents a dozen, that's $7.50. And when I got back here at home, it was 12 o'clock that night. And I was muddy from head to foot where I'd been pushing and getting out of the mud.
Well, when did they first have roads down here? I mean, say either gravel roads or some form of roads that got y'all out of the mud where y'all could more or less pretty well travel?
I can't remember just what year it was, but it was back in about 1904 or 5, somewhere along in there, 1910 or somewhere along in there. They first built a half of a, well, they built a 9-foot concrete slab. And then they put the rest of it with shale, which made 18 feet. And that's what they had to go from Ashwood, well, from Pleasure, out to Highway 35 now. Of course, that wasn't no number then. And that was the way it went on into Bay City. And then back towards West Columbia down to the county line.
Well, then that was more or less the y'all's first road y'all had down here.
Yeah.
Well, then I guess that's more or less just what life was like back then, so your roads, your transportation and everything put together.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the situation then, if you went anywhere. And I've seen the time that you couldn't ride a horse down the goddamn road. It'd be, mud would be belly deep almost to a horse. Them rains, you know, like we had here. You'd have to go all out in the woods somewhere, you know, get out of the road.
The transportation just wasn't too good back then.
Nothing but just horses and buggies and wagons.
If you wanted to go in town, it'd take you a day's trip just to go in town, and back wouldn't have time to do anything else.
Yeah, and you take, say, from Pledger to Warden, which was up there where we lived, that was 20 miles. And if we had, we had 6 or 8 bales of cotton on a wagon, chances are you wouldn't get there until way in the night, because you'd probably bog down once or twice before we got there. And you always have 2 wagons, so if one got stuck, the other could pull him out, you see. And boy, it was a mess, I'll tell you.
Well, what would y'all do about y'all's day's chores? I know on a farm back in those times, that each day y'all had a certain thing y'all had to do, the chores.
Yeah.
Well, say if y'all had to make a trip into town, well, that'd kill the whole day right there. What would y'all do about y'all's chores? Would y'all?
Well, that'd be depend on who's going to go to town. The whole works wouldn't go. You see, just one of us maybe go to town or go to the post office or something, go to a store or something. But there'd be always somebody there, you know, to carry on to work, like a boss man or something. See, they used to have field bosses, you know, for cotton choppers and cotton pickers and things like that. Especially in cotton chopping time, they'd have a gang of cotton choppers, say 15 to 20 of them chopping cotton at one time, you see. Well, he was paid so much a month, you know, just as a boss man. He take care of the labor part of it, you see.
How many, say I'm chopping that cotton, how many acres could they chop? Say 20 people, how many acres could they chop?
Well, you take one man, that depends on, some of them were good choppers and some of them weren't, you know. They just drags along, and I know my granddaddy used to call them the drop shot gang. It wouldn't do much work, you know, dragging along. But some of them was real good choppers, and one man could chop maybe 3 acres a day by himself.
That was going to be considered a pretty heavy load.
Yeah.
How many pounds of cotton could you get in, say, a day, say, off of 3 acres?
You mean in picking cotton?
Yes.
Well, that depends. Sometimes you can make that depends on the season, like it is now. Sometimes you make a bale to the acre. Sometimes you wouldn't hardly get a half a bale. Sometimes you wouldn't get nothing. It rained, you know, and ruined it all. But a good year, well, they'd make a bale to the acre, something like that. Of course, we didn't use no fertilizer or nothing.
Yeah, then, I guess, you know, picking cotton pretty slow back then compared to what it is nowadays with your combine.
Oh, I used to try to learn to pick cotton, and as high as I could get was 250 pounds a day. And I'd pick and right with a nigger man, and that man could pick 500 pounds of cotton a day.
So he was really going, wasn't
he? Oh boy, he was a cotton picker. But I never could stay up with him. He'd just walk off, you know. He walked on his knees, he had his knee pads, you know, and he'd stay on his knees and pick cotton with both hands and put it in the sack all the time, you know, just like that. Just like a machine, you might say.
I imagine at the end of the day he's pretty tired.
It didn't bother him. Boy, he was a cotton picking fool.
Well, I guess that'll just about wrap it up then, Mr. Brown. I so thank you.
You're welcome. Just hope it'll do you some good.